Between now and November 1st, the Department of Justice in Baltimore City will be crafting a consent decree, a court-ordered agreement outlining the steps the Baltimore Police Department will take to fix the problems exposed in a recent DOJ report. That report found a systemic pattern of unconstitutional policing in the city's poorest neighborhoods. Cincinnati is one of 20 U.S. cities where the police force is operated under a federal consent decree. WYPR's Mary Rose Madden recently went to Cincinnati to bring us the final installment of our series, On the Watch, a look at what reform looks like 15 years after it was ordered.
It's a familiar story. In 2001, a white officer in Cincinnati shot an unarmed black teenager as he was running from the police. There were days of riots, and then a federal lawsuit, an investigation, and an agreement that took months to be hammered out.
The city did not want to have a consent decree, but the city found it offensive. The police department pushed back, and it got pretty nasty.
I'm sitting in a coffee shop near the University of Cincinnati with John Eck, a professor of criminal justice. In the days after the riots, Eck was an advisor to the court.
The judge just laid the hammer down, said, I'm sorry, this is a consent decree, right? You have to do this. This is not a negotiation anymore.
Eck says it wasn't pretty and it wasn't quick, but an agreement slowly came.
It took a long time to get people to a point where they were willing to sit down at the table with a great deal of skepticism, their arms closed, clenched over their chests, and actually have conversations. And as wishy-washy as having conversations sounds, ultimately that's what starts something tangible on the ground.
Along with the city and the Justice Department, the ACLU and the Black United Front, which was like today's Black Lives Matter movement, joined the negotiations. Plus, the police union, the FOP, voted to be part of the negotiations, too.
It was a very tough political campaign in the FOP to make sure that happened. But the point of it is that it was a real cooperative effort among everybody.
Despite the city's resistance and the wishy-washy sit-downs, they finally agreed on the terms of the consent decree. They called it, and still do call it, the Collaborative. The Collaborative had several points of police reform. One was a complete overhaul of the policing strategy, which had been a lot like zero-tolerance policing. The city agreed to adopt a new strategy, one which had officers solving problems with fewer arrests and use of force. Another point of the Collaborative was the creation of an independent group to investigate use of force complaints against the police department. Kim Neal is the director of the Citizens Complaint Authority. She shows me around the office where one of their investigators is talking to a uniformed officer.
So that's one of our investigators. Dina is another one, and she's investigating that. She's questioning the cop right now. So she's taping it through the computer.
In Cincinnati, people can complain directly to the authority, and they have the power to call in any officers named in a report, and the officer has to come in for questioning. And Neal says, the authority does not report to the police chief. They report to the city manager, the police chief's boss. Neal says her department keeps a constantly updated database.
We track demographics, we track neighborhoods, we even track complainants.
And they track the cops they've investigated.
One of the things that the Collaborative says we must do, and we do it now, is we do a patterns report. If there is an officer who's had a complaint filed against him more than 10 times in a three-year period, we consider that a pattern officer. It does not matter if the complaint was unfounded, exonerated, not sustained. The fact is, we've had 10 different incidences where this officer's been complained on. Now, the idea behind that is to let the chief know and the city manager know, well, maybe we need to look at these officers and see what's going on.
Their annual reports are available to the public online. The pattern officers are identified in the report. This gives the citizens layers of transparency. The Citizens Complaint Authority has much more power than Baltimore's Citizen Review Board. In Baltimore, police can refuse to answer questions. The results are sent back to the police department, and that's the end of citizen involvement. The Cincinnati Collaborative officially ended in 2008, but city leaders, residents, and others don't want to go back to the days of no transparency, no accountability, no fairness, days when citizens in the poorest neighborhoods are scared of crime from every direction, from the corner boys to the police. So the city hired a collaborative sustainability manager who's in charge of making sure the collaborative never really ends. This takes a big commitment from the city officials, from the community, from the police officers. But not everyone in Cincinnati is satisfied with how far police reform has gone.
Look, people say Cincinnati is the example for how you reform policing.
Brian Taylor, 42, is a Cincinnati native and a leader in the city's Black Lives Matter movement. He points to the fact that several people have been killed by police in the city in the past 2 years.
We've had Sam Dubose, we've had Paul Gaston, we've had Murray, we've had Jawari Porter, Quandavier Hicks. But there's always an excuse, there's always a reason. And after these killings take place, what the city administration likes to do is say, okay, that was wrong. We're going to put something in place so it doesn't happen again. But they don't address what just happened. And the police are not indicted.
One of the people Taylor names was killed by University of Cincinnati police. And that officer was indicted. His trial is expected next month. Taylor says the Black Lives Matter movement is hundreds strong in Cincinnati, with activists coming from the surrounding counties to express their outrage.
But we're going to be out to pressure people and make sure that we let the city know that there's a price to pay if he doesn't get sentenced correctly.
He says they fight for convictions. It's not enough for police reform to center on community policing, recruiting, and training.
Well, there's a certain line of thinking that the problem is simply that just a few bad police are the problem. Now, if that's what you believe is at the heart of the crisis, just not understanding the hood, then those would be viable solutions.
But there are systemic problems in the police department, and they're much deeper than how cops see the inner city communities. Taylor says their work didn't end when the collaborative came to be 10 years ago.
Nothing is set in stone. So as time passed, the police started to test their space. And they gained space. And they gained more space. And they gained more space.
Eck, the criminal justice professor at the University of Cincinnati, says police reform, like the collaborative, has to be nurtured. It can never be neglected. I'm Mary Rose Madden, reporting in Baltimore for 88.1 WYPR.
You can check out the full series on The Watch, including new videos and photographs at WYPR.org. The special series supported by grant funding from the Bendit Family Foundation, Sig and Barbara Shapiro, the Zanvall and Isabel Krieger Fund, and the Open Society Institute, Baltimore.